This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about revolution, abortion, inflation. Senator Ron Johnson's here to talk FISA. We're going to talk about another American suffering under the justice system. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. You know, there's something different about us as Americans, and there's a lot of very good things that are different about us as Americans. Don't ever feel ashamed to be an American. But we should understand that we have something in our minds. You have something in your mind. I have something in my mind that is probably not true. And this is that something. This is that something. Revolution, when we think about revolution, rebellion, we kind of like it, don't we? Why? Well, we're Americans. We had a revolution here. We were under the British government. They were oppressive, taxing, gnawing on us. We had a revolution. We rebelled. We had a revolution. And after our revolution, things got better for us. Better for us. No more kings. No more British. Oh my gosh, we're free. We have a constitution. This, that. Things got better for us. So the idea of rebellion and revolution for us as Americans kind of is cool, isn't it? It's a good thing. Yeah, revolution. But you ever read any history? Study any history books at all? Like it when we talk about history on the show? There is something historically that you can see over and over and over again. And if you weren't thanking God that you were an American before, you should be thanking him now. When I drop this one on you, there haven't been very many good revolutions in the history of the world. And when I say good, this is what I mean. Almost always, when people rise up in anger and they cast out whoever the evil leader is, a king, a government, it doesn't matter what it is. And the people generally have a good reason. Yeah, we're mad. Government sucks. Normally that government does suck. It's evil. It's bad. But the people rise up and they cast out the government. Almost every single time, things get worse for the people in that country. You know, Haiti. Look, Haiti's actually a great example of this. They had some of the worst slavery in the Western world in Haiti. It was despicable. As sugar cane harvesting. It was torture. It was just so bad. Treating people like dirt. And eventually they had enough, and they rose up and had a revolution. How are things in Haiti today? It's a dump. It's maybe the worst place on the planet today. Over and over and over again, you see this throughout history. The reason I'm bringing this up is there is something happening on a macro level, on a 30,000-foot level. There's something happening on the right in the GOP, the old GOP. The old way of doing things, the Mitt Romneys, the Bushes, the whatever. Maybe you love that way, maybe you hate it that way, but that way is going away. You can see it. If you don't get too caught up in the minutiae, you can see it with all the retirements in the Senate, in the House. You can see it with people who lose primaries now versus people who win primaries now. It's not happening as fast as you want or as fast as I want, but it is happening, and that is a good thing. The old GOP is garbage. It's useless. It's weak. It didn't conserve anything for us. Good. Send it out. The GOP is being remade. It is being remade. There is a revolution happening within the GOP, and it is good that the old GOP is going away. However, we live right now, you and I, we live in dangerous times on the right, and this is why. This is the time, this revolutionary phase we're in right now in the GOP, this is the time that will decide what the new GOP will actually look like. You see, when we talk about casting out the old, we sound very much like an angry Russian citizen under the czars. The old sucks. This czar family sucks. They're oppressive and we're hungry and everything sucks. They suck. They gotta go. And we're right about that, right? That old GOP sucks. They got to go. But then those same people, 5 years later, 10 years later, found themselves being tortured to death in a gulag beside their family members. Why? Well, the old went, but the new was actually worse than what they just got rid of, the Bolsheviks, when they took over. What will the new GOP look like? Well, it will be determined by these times right now. by what we decide we're for, what we decide we're against, what we push for, what normal people, you, me, what we tell our congressmen about, our state houses about. We are deciding now what the new GOP will be. And that brings me to the issue of abortion. Okay, let's get something straight here, because I'm going to make this really, really fast. I understand completely Republicans who run nationally and try to avoid the issue of abortion. Why? Because abortion is very popular with women in the United States of America. Married women, single women, Democrats, Republicans, poll after poll after poll says women do not want it banned. Sadly, we live in a country full of women who love to kill their babies. I know that's terrible, but that is the kind of country we live in. So I understand this way of thinking on the right. And I understand Trump's not really reversal on the issue. He's never been that pro-life anyway throughout his life. But I understand. Well, remember after the midterms. Remember the midterms weren't a red wave, it was a red trickle. And remember Trump put out this statement? Kind of a random statement, taking a shot at pro-lifers. It wasn't my fault that the Republicans didn't live up to expectations in the midterms. I was 233-20. It was the abortion issue, poorly handled by many Republicans, especially those that firmly insisted on no exceptions, even in the case of rape, incest, or life of the mother, that lost a large number of voters, so on and so on. Okay, wasn't my fault. It was the pro-lifers. Okay, so that's obviously how Trump thinks. Trump does his own social media. That was him in the middle of the night, pouring his heart and soul out there. And then it was what? 2 days ago? It was Monday. Trump made this little announcement on social media.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Okay. Whatever they decide must be the law of the land. Send abortion back to the states. Many people had a problem with that. Many people did not. Maybe you love it. Maybe you hate it. Yeah, but that was Trump Monday. Hey, send it back to the states. All right, most people could live with it. Even extreme pro-lifers like me, okay, fine, let's deal with it. I believe we have to deal with abortion culturally anyway. But let's move ahead. We got this word yesterday about this ruling in Arizona, Arizona's Supreme Court. They did a ruling. What did it say? Well, it said that Arizona can ban abortion completely. It was a state-level decision. You know, they were just saying, return it to the states. It was returned to the states. The states made a decision. Yes, you can ban abortion completely in Arizona. Carrie Lake promptly came out. She's running for Senate as a Republican in Arizona, promptly came out and trashed the ruling. In fact, she called on the Democrat governor of Arizona to come up with legislation more reasonable. She called for Democrat legislation that would allow more abortion. That's the Senate candidate in Arizona, the Republican Senate candidate. Okay? So you just said return it to the states. They returned it to the states. They banned it. Then now you're against it. And I assumed Trump would be okay with that ruling because he just said on Monday, return it to the states. But then Trump said this today.
Thank you, sir. Can you, Mr. President, did Arizona go too far? Did Arizona go too far?
Yeah, they did, and that'll be straightened out. And as you know, it's all about states' rights. That'll be straightened out. And I'm sure that the governor and everybody else are going to bring it back into reason, and that will be taken care of, I think, very quickly.
Yeah, the governor, yeah, they went too far there, and the Democrat governor is going to bring it back into reason. Okay. Well, like I said, I don't have any problem with Donald Trump making a statement about abortion back to the states. Fine. I don't expect him to be with me there. It goes back to the state. The state makes a ruling, abortion's banned. Remember what I was talking about the new GOP and revolutions and kind of that be careful what you wish for kind of a thing? Look, I'm going to tell you this, and this is just you and me talking, all right? You know, I'm not saying you have to agree with me, but I'm going to tell you this. The Republican Party, they give me big spending just like Democrats do. the Republican Party, they fund the FBI, just like Democrats do. The Republican Party doesn't want to repeal the Obamacare law that's been destroying our healthcare system ever since, just like Democrats do. Democrat position after Democrat position after Democrat position. Republican Party leaders just try to get amnesty through, just like Democrats do. I've been voting Republican my entire life. I've had a list of reasons why I can't vote Democrat, and I mean, I have to vote Republicans. I've got a few things that they're better on. You're better on the border, that type of thing. My list is getting awfully small on the Republican side. And after this revolution, whatever this is, if the new GOP, if they're all done with those foreign wars, but hey, man, abortion's fine. I don't want to lose an election. If that's the new GOP, then count me out. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Let's talk about many things on this show tonight. First, let's talk about Lone Star Transfer. Let's talk about the timeshare you think you're stuck in. You are not stuck in your timeshare. Did you know that? They tell you you're stuck because they lie. That's what these timeshare companies do. It's very sad how common this is. They all do it. They lie and lie and lie. Nope, sorry, you signed the contract. Sorry, you have to go to Section 5, Paragraph E. You see that? It says you're in for life. And then what they do? They raised your annual fees, didn't they? They've doubled in some cases. You know Lone Star Transfer has helped over 20,000 people permanently and legally get out. This is a family company with an A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau. Just make a phone call. Just call Lone Star Transfer and let them set you free, all right? They are wonderful people. 844-310-2646. Did I mention they put it in writing and they give you a time frame? It's not like you make a phone call. Well, honey, now we just hope for the best. They put it in writing. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I think we can feel great about our economy.
I was going to ask you what you made of this last jobs report.
Well, it just shows the U.S. is firing on all cylinders.
Man, things are going so well. I am excited. I'm excited to hear that. Joining me now, Carol Roth. She is a world-famous author at this point in time. Her latest book is outstanding. You Will Own Nothing. You know Carol well. I don't even have to introduce her anymore. Okay, Carol, 3.5% inflation. It's obviously much, much, much worse than that, but that's the official number they're going with. What should we do with all this stuff?
Well, the inflation report did come in hotter than Jesse Kelly after eating a bucket of extra spicy wings, which is a layman's term for, yes, it was even worse than Wall Street expected. And as you mentioned, we know that the number that they published is far below what the issues are that are being felt by average Americans who are having trouble buying food, paying their rent and mortgages, and just getting by with living. Except that the elite wants to not only tell you that you're wrong, you know, it's bad enough that they have created the situation that you're in, but they need to gaslight you. They need to tell you that you don't know what you're talking about, that they have a chart, and that things are going really well. And I think that's really part of the frustration here is that not only have they created this completely predictable situation that was entirely avoidable, and now after they have burnt the house down, the arsonist is standing there and going, no, the house isn't burnt down. I don't know what you're talking about. It looks great. And I think that's where people are really feeling the extra gut punch because they're hurting. And instead of acknowledging that we've screwed up, no, these people who have created this issue are telling you that you're doing phenomenal, that the economy is charging on all cylinders. Well, it's charging on all cylinders from an inflationary standpoint, But you have, well, debt's charging on all cylinders. The deficit is charging on all cylinders. Interest is charging all cylinders. So I guess technically she's correct in some ways, but unfortunately it's also charging right off a fiscal cliff.
Carol, to get to the basics of this, and I know this is very basic, the numbers can get confusing for stupid people like me. We see inflation at 3.5%, and yet you dig into the numbers, and here are some of them. Car insurance up 22%, car repair 12%, baby formula 10%, veterinarian 10%, rent 5.9%, electricity 5%, restaurants 4%. I don't see 3.5% anywhere on here. And Carol, I may have failed algebra many, many, many times, and that's a true story, by the way. But even I know if you add up a bunch of numbers that are all above 3.5% and then divide them by the amount of items on the list, you can't possibly get to 3.5%. So how are we at 3.5%, Carol?
Yes, there, you know, some other items that they've thrown into the list that they say are negative and are counteracting these things, you know, those things that, you know, not everybody's buying because they can't afford to buy them, Jesse, because they, you know, have used up all their money on basic things like commodities and rent. So, you know, but as we've said before, the numbers themselves are trash. Not only has the government had a hard time getting people to respond to these surveys that they do and entities to respond, so they have more modeling and more biases in the data, but they've changed their methodology for the way that they've computed this many times since 1980. So the data isn't reliable. And I think this is why you're getting the disconnect between the Paul Krugmans of the world and these other corporate press mouthpieces and Biden administration folks were going, well, you know, look at these things that say everything's going so great. And then people who are going to the grocery store and the gas station, they should really conduct these interviews. I think one of my Twitter followers said this, you know, at a gas station or, you know, at a grocery store, have Janet Yellen sit down with the media, you know, at the end of the register after somebody has checked out their groceries and have her tell them directly that that number on the screen isn't real and that the economy is firing on all cylinders. I think maybe we would get a different outcome.
Carol, I mentioned you are a world famous author now, of course, like me. I'm just kidding. She's written a lot more books than I have. But one of your books is The War on Small Business. It was one of my favorite ones you wrote. And I've been talking about this a lot on my radio show recently, that what I see happening when you look at the jobs going to non-American citizens versus citizens. Non-citizens, it's almost 4 million over 4 years. American citizens, it's down almost 100,000 in almost 4 years. When you look at the stock market doing well, but then you dig into that and you find out it's just the big Fortune 50, right? It's the Fortune 500 doing well. Small businesses closing en masse still. What it looks like to me is a massive blood sucking in this economy from all the haves just hoovering up everything and taking it away from the middle and lower class. That's what I see happening. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. And one of these days, I would like for you to be wrong, Jesse, because unfortunately, all these things that you continue to be right about are highly depressing. But we have had over, you know, the past several years, this historic transfer of wealth from Main Street to Wall Street. And so not only does that mean that the middle and working class are getting crushed and the small businesses are getting crushed, but then you're creating more class warfare that can be used to then go ahead and attack the middle and working class and small businesses. It's like the same playbook that they run over and over again. And just the sort of disconnect from reality is really allowing for this to happen, allowing for cheerleading. If you look out in California, this $20 minimum wage that they've instituted for fast food companies, and now you're seeing all of these franchisees going out of business, which we, again, completely predicted, because of course that was going to happen. And then, you know, these people don't have jobs anymore. And the only people who are left that can afford this are the big companies that can invest in automation. And oh, by the way, even if you're not a restaurant company, when you have somebody who can go to a bigger company and have no skills and flip burgers and get paid $20 an hour, then your business, whatever it's in, may not be able to compete with that for low skilled wages. And oh, by the way, for higher skilled wages, because if you're somebody who has skills and someone with no skills is getting paid $20 an hour, you of course want to get paid more. But this doesn't happen in a vacuum. That means it's going to push up the cost of everything, push up prices. And that's why one of the reasons why we're continuing to see this inflation. So things like that, things like the government overspending, has these ancillary impacts, as you said, which is really creating this haves and have-nots. And we know throughout history that that has not ended very well. And it's really against the sort of fundamental foundation of what America's about. The whole idea of the American dream is that anybody can come to this country, and it doesn't matter who you are, where you were born, you know, what kind of a background you have. But if you work hard and you work smart and you do the right things and you save, that you can achieve a really nice, financially free and independent life the way that you want. And unfortunately, the central planners are putting up barriers to that, and they're only allowing that for the elite and well-connected. And you know, this is the bastion of that hope in the world. So if it goes away here, there's nowhere else you're going to get that. And that's why it's so important for us to continue to fight for it.
Amen. Carol, you are the best. Beth, you are the best. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Joe Biden, the Biden administration, they're trying to do a lot of things, really evil things. The Republicans are going to help him pass FISA? Are they really? Talk to Senator Ron Johnson about that next. Before we get to Ron Johnson, let's get to this. All right. You just heard her. We've talked about this a million times. I'm not trying to be, you know, she said she hates when I'm right, and I hate when I'm right. I'm not trying to be down. I'm trying to make sure we're ready. Are we ready? What have you done to get ready? Get ready for what? Well, inflation's hotter than expected. You know they haven't stopped printing money, right? They haven't stopped spending. It's just, they haven't, in fact, they're bragging about not cutting a dime. Chuck Schumer himself, bragging. Oh, well, we didn't cut a nickel, is actually what he said. That's his direct quote. Have you made preparations? Have you, that retirement account I just referenced, what have you done with yours? Do you have gold or silver as part of it? Make sure you don't lose it all. Do you have it in your physical possession? You know you don't need a bank vault, right? Oxford Gold Group isn't going to send you gold bars, but they'll get coins, silver or gold coins in your hands. Call Oxford Gold Group and make preparations. 833-995-GOLD, all right? 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
To dismiss the impeachment charges on Thursday. Are you at all concerned that if some Democrats in tough races vote for that, it could come back to haunt them on the campaign trail?
Look, we're going to try and resolve this issue as quickly as possible. Impeachment should never be used to settle policy disagreements.
We're going to try to resolve this issue. Well, this is quite an issue, isn't it? You've been handed an impeachment. You do have to have a trial, right? We'll see if they play that game. Joining me now, a great senator from the state of Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, look, I can see it coming. I'm sure you can see it coming. There's no way there's going to be an impeachment trial, right? Only Republicans would do something so stupid.
Well, it's certainly what Senator Schumer is talking about right now. And it's pretty obvious why they don't want an impeachment trial is they don't want the public understanding what a catastrophe their open border policy is. So they want to table this as quickly as possible and move on. But Republicans here in the Senate, we're trying to do everything we can to highlight this issue. We held a press conference yesterday saying that it's our constitutional responsibility to hold a trial when the House manages to send over the articles of impeachment. And it's certainly our responsibility to point out to the American public the clear and present danger that is President Biden and his Democrat colleagues in Congress, their open border policy. And it's extremely important to understand that it's not just President Biden. This is every Democrat in Congress supports an open border. They caused this problem. They just don't want the American public to understand the full extent of it.
Senator, how much power do we have, the power to force a trial? People don't understand how this works with motions and this and that. Normal people don't understand how that works. Do we have the juice without the majority to force a trial?
Yeah, probably not, particularly now the parliamentarian has ruled that a motion to table would be in order. We don't agree with that, but once the parliamentarian rules, that's basically how the Senate operates. But again, we don't have to lay down, and we're not. A number of us contacted Speaker Johnson, who had intended to deliver those articles today at 5 o'clock, setting up Schumer's tabling motion Thursday at 1 o'clock. That's generally when the Senate is adjourning for the week and people are heading back to their states. And so they wanted to snuff this thing out this week. A number of us contacted Speaker Johnson. He didn't really understand the Senate only works till about noon on Thursday. And so he decided to delay delivering those articles so that we can make the point that we should hold a trial. But certainly we can make the point about what a catastrophe Biden's open border policy is.
Yeah, it's obvious they don't want to actually solve this problem, even though old Papa Joe is on TV talking about shutting down the border. Here he was.
Have you made a final decision on taking executive order in terms of what you want to do at the border? That includes the power to shut down the border, as it was suggested.
Well, it suggested that. We're examining whether or not I have that power.
Why do these people pretend now? It's very obvious to everyone, isn't it, Senator? They don't want the border closed. They want it open.
Well, it's obvious to me. It's obvious to you. But it also should be obvious that President Biden has the authority. President Trump had the authority. Even though it's been weakened by court decisions, a president has, you know, the current laws exude deference, is what the Supreme Court ruled. He has the authority. So President Trump used that authority to close down the border. President Biden used that exact same executive authority and opened it back up. So he has the authority. He just doesn't want to use it because, again, they want an open border. They caused this problem. They just don't want the American public to notice it. But the American public is noticing it, primarily because Democrat mayors who, you know, touted their sanctuary cities realize that their sanctuary cities are going to be destroyed by President Biden's open border policy. So the mainstream media was forced to start covering this catastrophe.
Senator, switching gears here, there's a couple big debates going on in Congress right now. One of the biggies, probably the biggie, is FISA. Is the government going to keep being able to spy on me and take all my stuff without actually getting a warrant? Are they? Is this something that GOP is finally going to put a stop to?
Well, I was hoping so. I know Chairman Jordan had worked with his committee to require warrants on American citizens. For some reason, the House Intelligence Committee doesn't like that. Other Republicans don't like that. They think it's too restrictive. I don't think it's too restrictive. Because now we've seen how FISA has been abused by the FBI, by federal law enforcement. So you have to put those types of controls in. I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. I fear that the fix is in. But I certainly hope that Chairman Jordan's amendments get voted on, because I think if they will be voted on, sounds like they would pass. So again, I don't know exactly how this is going to be disposed of, but from my standpoint, we definitely need to reform FISA. And this is coming from somebody who's supported in the past when we were told, well, show us one American whose constitutional rights have ever been trampled on. Back then, I couldn't point to anybody. Now I can point to a former president of the United States whose constitutional rights were trampled on. So we absolutely need reform to FISA.
Senator, Ukraine aid is obviously the other big thing in the news right now. What do we send? Do we send anything? Do we send nothing? You're a senator with access to a lot of people that I don't have access to. What is the goal for Ukraine? It's one thing to stand up and say, send Ukraine money. That's not a goal. What is the goal? Do they believe they can push the Russians out? What are they trying to do now?
Well, I fear what they're trying to do is use the Ukrainian people as a proxy in a proxy war against Russia to degrade their military and industrial capacity. But I would argue it's having the exact opposite effect. The war in Ukraine has driven up oil prices. That means that more oil revenue is going to Russia. They're building up their industrial base, their military industrial complex. They're producing more 155 millimeter shells. So I don't see Russia getting weakened in this process. I see Ukraine being destroyed. So from my standpoint, the only way this war in Ukraine ends is in the negotiating table. And any action we take ought to be trying to get Putin to come to the negotiating table to end this bloody stalemate. Because in the end, it's not good for Russia. It's not good to have Russian conscripts die to destroy Ukraine further. But this administration, again, like most Democrats, completely denying reality. I heard Chuck Schumer come out of the White House meeting and say it's simple. $60 billion, if Ukraine gets it, they win. If not, they lose. How are they going to win? You're not going to displace Russia out of Ukraine. Russia's not going to lose this war. They have four times the population. Vladimir Putin losing this war is existential to Vladimir Putin. They have nuclear weapons. They're not going to lose this war. We need to recognize that unfortunate reality.
Senator, finally, Zuckerbucks are no longer, as they're known, they're no longer going to be allowed in Wisconsin. I'm hearing a lot of encouraging news in Wisconsin because of local school board races. We have these ballot initiatives that are going through. Is Wisconsin redder than maybe most people thought it is? They elected you.
I wish it were. I don't think it is. We're a very evenly divided state. And the fact of the matter is in order to win, we need an incredibly strong ground game. We need community captains. I mean, Democrats, and this is true through other states as well, they've got strongholds in the big Democrat-controlled cities. It's a lot easier to mine all the votes they need in just a couple localities, where Republicans, we have to go throughout the state, every little small town, every small city. We need to get all those votes. So it needs an incredibly strong ground game. Plus, the rules of the elections are set. We may not like them, but we have early voting, you have absentee voting, you have ballot harvesting in Wisconsin. We've got to engage in all of those things. We can't be outvoted prior to election day. We need to do everything else to bank our votes early, and that's what we're certainly encouraging throughout the state of Wisconsin for Republicans to do.
Yeah, it sure was. Senator, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it. All right. We have so much more. Jeffrey Clark is going to join us next. All kinds of legal matters and lawfare and things we need to discuss before he does that. Speaking of the law, see that latest video out of New York? Some piece of trash. Little old lady climbing the stairs of her church, and he just grabs her and just chucks her right down the stairs and takes her purse. Our streets are filling up with animals. You know this. It's not just in New York City. It's in your small town, too. They're shipping the illegals all over the daggone country. What do you carry to protect yourself with? What does your mother carry? What does your daughter, your son? What do you carry to protect yourself with? Your dad? Byrna. A Byrna pistol launcher is a necessity. Byrna is a non-lethal alternative. I carry lethal and non-lethal. I believe in carrying both. But maybe you hate guns. Whatever. Whether you carry them or don't like them at all, get a Byrna pistol launcher. Shoots pepper balls or tear gas balls. It'll save your life, and it's legal in all 50 states. It's for everyone. No background checks, no permits needed. They'll mail one to your front door. BYRNA. Byrna.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Lawfare. We love to use that term now, and we should, because there's a lot of lawfare going on in this country. But when most people use it, they focus only on Donald Trump. I realize that. He's the star. He's the headliner. But there have been a lot of Americans in and around his orbit who have had their rights destroyed, attacked by the legal system in this country. And it's disgusting when it happens to anybody. Joining me now, Jeffrey Clark, former U.S. Assistant Attorney General, senior fellow at the Center for Renewing America. Okay, Jeff, most people, sadly, do not know your story. I do. Act like I don't, though. Tell us what's happening to you and why.
Sure, Jesse. Well, thanks for having me on. And look, you know, as you said, President Trump's the star of the evil attack called Lawfare. And if he's the star, then I'm the understudy. I was just counting it up today. I'm fighting in 8 different litigation forums. It's really amazing. So here's a basic story. I served as a high-ranking official in the Justice Department in the Bush administration. And then I got promoted to a Senate-confirmed spot in the Trump administration. And the Democrats blocked me for quite a while. They know how intensely conservative that I am and that I have a very successful litigation track record. And so they delayed my confirmation until the middle of October. I took office on November 1st of 2018 and, you know, served honorably in that Justice Department and in the Bush 43 Justice Department. But I, you know, according to some, made the mistake of touching the third rail of the 2020 presidential election. And that began my time of troubles. For a time, I was actually the acting Attorney General of the United States. People who I thought were my friends viciously turned on me and began to attack me, question my competence, even though I was the only Assistant Attorney General put in charge of 2 of 7 of the main justice litigating divisions. There are only 7, and I was running 2 at the same time. They started to attack my credentials because it seemed to me that they wanted to just usher President Trump out of office and return to their lucrative partnerships, most of them, in what's called big law. And so I thought that, you know, an idea that I had surfaced that didn't come to fruition, was just purely internal within the Justice Department, but these same enemies leaked to the New York Times. And then folks started coming after me, first the Senate Judiciary Committee, then the House Oversight Committee, then the January 6th Committee, then the D.C. Bar. And most recently, I've been one of the named criminal defendants in Fannie Willis's case in Fulton County, Georgia. So that's what's mounted up the 8 different forums in federal court, state court. It's truly a nightmare. And if you're not a litigator, luckily I am, keeping track of all that is not something I want to bore your viewers with. But, trust me, it's more litigation than you can shake a stick at.
Well, all right, but before we get to that third rail you touched, I want you to just expand on something really quickly for people because they don't understand how that works. Before they go back to big law, you referenced big law where these people go. Are you telling me that when these attorney generals and U.S. attorneys, when they leave government as the public servants they are, that they don't go on to rake leaves and work construction somewhere? Do they go somewhere else generally?
Yes, they do. They return to big law. And look, I'm from big law. I spent, 18 years or so at different points in time at one of the most important big law firms, Kirkland & Ellis, as a partner. From the end of the Bush 43 first term until when I started serving in the Trump administration and as an associate before that. So most of my career has either been at that large big law firm or at the Justice Department. And as a result, though, of touching the third rail of the election, I've been canceled by big law. But all of the people who aligned themselves against President Trump's view of all of the shenanigans that were involved in the 2020 election, they've all gone back to very lucrative partnerships or other kinds of arrangements with big law firms.
Yeah, wow, how that all worked out. Okay, let's discuss this third rail you touched that has every single legal apparatus in this country coming down on you. What exactly were you looking into? What bothered you about 2020?
Well, the first thing, Jesse, is that, you know, I have training in economics. I double majored in economics at Harvard, and then I worked for 3 years doing tax policy analysis and economic work for the state of Delaware before I went to law school. And so I'm a sophisticated consumer of statistical products and also worked with expert witnesses when I was a litigator. And so I saw the statistical analyses of this election and something was off to me. And indeed, one of the witnesses that we presented at my bar trial in the last couple of weeks John Lott, who's an eminent economist, econometrician, statistician, he had concluded that there was something very wrong, you know, especially in a place like Fulton County, Georgia, which is where I focused my efforts to look at. And eventually I wound up being asked by President Trump, there's an email to this effect. So, you know, the DOJ, the Biden DOJ released it publicly, so no one can deny it. I was asked to look at the lack of signature verification in Fulton County. And, you know, what we suspected was true at the time has definitely been confirmed in spades, which is that there was no signature verification in Fulton County. And without signature verification, Jesse, if you have a massive expansion of mail-in ballots, you're just looking at, you know, something that can be exploited. And that's why, you know, going back to a commission that President Carter was on, along with Jim Baker, they concluded that the area most ripe for fraud was mail-in ballots. And indeed, Bill Barr, before his change of heart in December of 2020, in September or so of 2020, he said the same thing. Mail-in ballots are, you know, something that can be exploited. And so, you know, touching this third rail should not have been so catastrophic for my career and for avoiding litigation. But, you know, it seems very odd that by raising these questions that have been raised for decades, you know, I became a big target. But that's what happened.
Why did Bill Barr have, in your opinion, why did he have such a change of heart? It was such a 180. You would think that he would have been behind you with all this.
Well, you know, he's done a 180 and now it's a 360, Jesse, because he has an election integrity group. I was explaining this to some, you know, friends of mine recently. right. So, okay, there's going to be a problem with mail-in ballots. We got to watch for that in September, right? Then you get to December and it's, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong. We found no problems with the election that could have altered the outcome. And then he defended that for a long time. But now, you know, he runs an organization that is doing election integrity. But, you know, why is everyone focused on the issue of election integrity? Because they have strong suspicions about what happened in 2020. So, you know, like his head's spinning more times than the Roman god, you know, Janus, who had heads pointing in two different directions, Jesse.
That is wonderful. We got to worry about mail-in ballots. Hey, shut up about the mail-in ballots. Send me money for my fundraising group so I can get on the mail-in ballots. Okay, so how is this going to shake out for you in the end? I know a lot of this is in the courts, but surely they're not going to disbar you or something. What are these people trying to do to you?
Well, Jesse, they are trying to disbar me. For a time, the D.C. Bar Disciplinary Council, who's a government official in D.C. under their home rule, was very cagey about what kind of discipline he was seeking against me. But eventually he let that cat out of the bag and said that he was seeking disbarment. And then last week at my trial, in his closing statement, and then in the remedy phase, so-called, he argued for that form of relief. So that's what they're seeking. And the hearing committee, it's an odd structure in D.C. It's all volunteers, two lawyer volunteers, one of whom is the chair of the hearing committee and the other of whom is a layperson. They met in executive session and they voted that, in their view, in a preliminary non-binding determination, which is kind of an oxymoron, that I had violated one of two rules and they didn't specify which. So over the course of the next month, there's going to be post-trial briefing and then they'll issue a recommendation. And then, you know, this process is very long. It goes then to a board of professional responsibility and then to the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the highest local court under home rule. And then, you know, I can ask the Supreme Court to take the case potentially because there are very important federal and constitutional issues here, Jesse.
Yeah, Lee. Jeffrey, I'm glad you were out there telling your story. You are welcome back on my show anytime, sir. I appreciate you very much. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Think about that. Just process that for a moment. It's not some idiot, some big shot. And all he did was dig into some Fulton County stuff in Georgia. Hey, the signatures, they're not matching. Hey, what's going on here? And now they're trying to disbar the man. What does that tell you? What are they worried about? All right, go lighten the mood. We got a good one for you next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And there's something that kind of bums me out sometimes. And this is what, I know it's weird, but this is what kind of bums me out sometimes. People get to know their local congressman or congresswoman. You know who yours is. You're involved politically. You pay attention. And there are 435 members of the House. We'll set the senators aside for a moment. 435 members in the House of Representatives. There are so many weapons-grade morons in there. Just the dumbest people you've ever seen or talked to in your entire life. But because there's 435 of them, it gets kind of lost in the national news. And you locally, you know your congressman's an idiot, but you want the nation to know. The nation just never finds out because there's so many of them. We have one of those here in Houston. Her name is Sheila Jackson Lee. Sheila Jackson Lee. I mean, it's really hard because there's a lot of them out there, but she might be the dumbest member of the United States House of Representatives, and I know how stupid all these people are. And this woman, this is an Ivy League graduate and a member of the United States Congress.
A full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat.
Mighty powerful heat.
It is almost impossible to go near the sun. The moon is more manageable.
The moon, it's a member of Congress. The moon's gases, but the sun is, I mean, it's almost impossible to get close. Almost? Do you have the way that you can get close to the sun, Sheila? I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.